There we go. Almost did it again. Welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton. Along with me is our personal 3K threat, Bethany McChesney. And today, instead of doing like preamble like we normally do, we're going to jump right into it with Julie Best, who is hot off the Spartan 3K. But before we go into that, I wanted to say that actually we really haven't met, but I was at North Carolina DECA when you were running there.
Oh, you were? Okay.
I did the rabbiting.
Oh.
And I was the lucky guy who got to be Tara's teammate for the relay.
Oh, cool.
so yeah. So I saw you perform there. I was impressed. You did really well. It was a good run.
Could have had some stuff better, but yeah.
There's always could have been a bit better. But
that's true. Started by doing a race called Million Dollar Mile.
Which is awesome, and I applied for it, didn't get taken.
Yeah, and I did really well on it. I was one of the better female ones on it, and I took home quite a bit of money. And Orla Walsh was the girl that I actually went against, and afterwards she's like, why aren't you doing this? And I was like, oh, I've only done one Spartan ever. I thought it was super fun. And she's like, you should be doing this more. And so the end of 2019, I jumped in and I did two elite races, and I ended up placing like in the top 10. And that was back when there was like 30 female elites on the starting line. So I was like, okay, cool. This is my thing. I want to train for this. But then COVID shut everything down. Nobody really got a race or do anything. And then, the year after that, I had trained really hard and I came back and I did really well. And I took a third place podium with Chris Roglowski and, Kelly, Sullivan at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. And then, 2 weeks after that, I tore my hamstring and glute like really bad, like severely. So it kind of put a stop to stuff for a while. Like it took me about a good 18 months to come back to the point where, I mean, I went and did Battle Bunker at the end of last year and some other Spartan races, but like it just never ever was feeling like 100%. And I felt like I couldn't train as hard as I wanted to. And it was just frustrating. And in December, I honestly almost quit. I was almost going to be like, you know what? I'm just done with the age I am right now. Like I love the sport, but like it's a lot of work to put in to race at an elite level, being a mom, owning a business, doing everything I do. Then in January, I was just like, you know what? My heart is just in it. Like, I just think I would have regrets if I stop. And then they introduced the 3K race. And I was like, hey, I can still sprint. This race is made for me. So that was kind of my push for jumping in and doing the 3K series. So
do you have a background then in running and racing?
I used to do triathlons. Kind of more for fun. I've jumped in a bunch of just road races for fun. I lived in a really small town in high school. So for track, I only did track my junior and senior year. And it just wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like the best coaching or anything. My graduating class was like 53 people. So so I don't have like a huge background in track other than I did it. I have a more of a background in gymnastics. I was a gymnast. So that's kind of where the whole love for obstacles kind of came from. But I do enjoy running, and I did develop a love for running post gymnastics because I just wanted to do something competitive. And I mean, basically the only thing you can do once you get into your 20s is like run. So that's what I started doing. Yeah.
I want to ask you about the Million Dollar Mile thing.
What do you want to know?
Well, I thought, okay. One, I mean, the show's not coming back. It didn't get great ratings, which I enjoyed it. I don't know why it didn't, but,
Well, they kind of did it weird. They didn't keep it going. They kind of had like a big break and then they advertised a bunch and then they didn't advertise at all. Like, it was just kind of weird how they did it. So I think it could have taken off if they would have done it right, because it was cool.
Yeah. And there definitely was some production stuff that could have been a little bit better, but the concept was cool. And so you got to run, you ran against the Vermonster, if you will. You ran against Orla Walsh.
Yeah.
So yep. How did that go? Because I mean, what wasn't it? You get like a 2 minute head start and then you had to hit, if you got three obstacles, you got like 50 grand if you bailed out, or you could keep going on something like that. Cause probably a lot of people.
I think we got like a minute 30 head start. Mm-hmm. Cause I know at first they were telling us 2 minutes, but then like it got dropped, but I can't remember if it ended up actually being 2 minutes. It might've been like a minute 30 head start. So
That would make sense to me because I had been thinking about it when I tried to apply and stuff. I was like oh. I know these guys, right? I know, you know, VJ and Hunter and Isaiah, and I know them, and they're all faster than me, but not by 2 minutes in a mile and over obstacles. So I'm like, I can do that.
Yeah. It was serious. It was really fun. And she actually afterwards, she was like, you made me really nervous. Cause I almost made it to the end. So, I actually was really upset because they came in and asked me before they came in the room and they said, who is going to get in the water? Nobody's been getting in the water this week. Cause I guess they filmed for multiple weeks and we were the first week to film. And I was like, I'll get in the water. I'm a swimmer. I'm getting in right away. And so you had to predetermine what your race path was before you went. Cause if you went the wrong way, they would cut you. And so I said, well, depending on how you guys do this, I want to get in the water. I think it was on my third one and do my obstacles right after, like my overhead obstacles. And I said, my hands are going to be wet and my clothes are going to be wet. And I knew it was like a really long bar chain. Like you couldn't really see stuff because they really showed it to us like the day of filming and you couldn't touch it or anything, but I just knew it was going to be really long and it'd be slippery. And they're like, oh, don't worry. We've got your back. So my husband still gives me crap about this. So they're like, don't worry, we'll have something for you. So I get up to, this was the fourth obstacle, hands are wet, whatever, from doing the water. I was quite a bit ahead of her. It doesn't show it on the TV like that, but it was. Get up to the obstacle and I'm like, what am I supposed to be finding here? So I saw a little bag of chalk. It was like a black bag of chalk on the black stage, picked it up, put it on my hands. It was like a soapy wet mess. It was horrible. And like right then I was like, I just screwed myself. Like I just lost this competition. So I actually went halfway through it, fell off, and she at that point passed me and hit the bell before me. So, but then later on, after watching it back, I realized that there was a black towel on the stage because she had picked up the black towel and wiped her hands off first. Didn't see it. So you live and you learn, I guess.
Oh, it sounds like a good time. And you came away with money from it. So it's good. It's too bad they won't have it back. I did enjoy the show. I thought it was great. So then you did like three Spartan races and you did a couple Spartan races before that. So then you decided to jump in the stadium race with Chris and Kelly in Dallas, like Dallas Stadium. That's like the big stadium race. So that's a good turnout there. So it must have been a pretty decent field.
It was a pretty good field. It was pretty good. I actually shocked myself at that one because I was like, oh, cool. Like I really can do this. I can hold my own with these guys. So, and it was cool because I had watched those guys race and I was like, oh my gosh, if I could ever just race against them, that would be so cool. Especially Chris. I mean, she's an animal. So that was really cool to race against her. I like had like, I don't know, wanted her autograph type of thing.
So we get to this weekend and this Spartan 3K up in the Poconos and very, very good field. This is definitively, well, actually, no, let's go back to your first 3K or whatever. Your first 3K, you went in and you ended up, you had a very good showing in your first 3K race.
Yeah, I did okay.
So walk us through that, how it was going into it, what you were expecting. Did it come up? Because it was a little bit different than what I was expecting when they first announced the 3K.
I feel like it was a lot what I kind of expected. I did expect it to be a little more rig heavy, but like I did love the rig. I think that's kind of my thing. Well, yeah, you kind of know it's kind of my thing when Big Bear took out the rigs and put in heavy carries and I sucked. So So yeah, I really liked it. I liked that we got to run through like the water right off of the beach. And I liked the crawls through the barbed wire. I mean, everything about it, I liked it. I really, really did like it. It was a little bit of a shock, I think, not only to me, but to like everybody else, that you race so fast back to back that like you're barely rested and you're like, okay, go again. Okay, go again. So it is a lot harder and a lot crazier than I think any of us ever expected.
So then you came and I was with you guys. I was hoping there'd be more rigs and stuff. I'm an obstacle guy too. Beth's that fast runner type person. I like the obstacles. So we went through there, like you say, Big Bear, completely different race. And that I actually did like, that they were switching it up a bit, a little bit of change, a little bit of different. And then we're at the Poconos and Pocono. Well, run us through your race at Pocono and how you felt about it, how like the course, how it was all set up, because this was, you know,
Poconos?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just say the course was actually super cool. I was a huge fan of the course. I thought it was great. Being from Utah, I practice hills like crazy. So to run up those hills was, I felt like a little bit my favor as opposed to people that live in flatter area. The barbed wire was really cool. And I actually was bummed when they took the barbed wire out of Big Bear, because I feel like I do really well with barbed wire just because I'm a smaller athlete and the taller athletes tend to get kind of more caught up in it. So I love the barbed wire. I like the obstacles. I like that they brought back the rig again. I like that they have the heavy stuff, but it's not so excessively heavy that somebody that's like small, that's specifically like more, I mean, I know I've jumped into hybrid stuff too, but like, I'm really more of an OCR athlete. I like the fact that that's, I mean, that's what I kind of expected as an OCR race instead of more hybrid. So, I really liked it. I really liked the whole setup for it. I thought it was great. I was feeling good that day. Humidity doesn't bother me. Heat doesn't bother me. So that's where it kind of gets like a little bit like crushes my heart, because I felt like that race was kind of set up for me to do really well at. And after doing my first two loops and qualifying for the finals, like I had a lot more to give. So, and I hadn't put it all out there yet. So I was really excited to try to put it all out there and just see what happened.
It did look like a good course. It looked like a lot of fun.
It was.
And I guess this is the first time I've been, I was actually supposed to be there and I backed out because I had just, I needed a break. I had, would have had to get another day off work. So very disappointing for me, bittersweet. But so you definitely had, and this is the reason we wanted to talk to you, or one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you. I had a bunch of stuff we're going to ask you about because we're just going to get to know you, but anyway, later on, but, and how you feel. But so you had an incident.
Yep. An incident.
like many Spartan incidents, it requires a bit of explanation.
Okay. So I've read the rules. I've read the rule book like a few times. I usually try to read it at the beginning of every season too, just to refresh. And I don't remember this being a rule, but they say it is, and I believe it is. Like, I just didn't remember it. So I got up to the steps, and the step to get up onto the rig. And I was kind of dizzy. I don't know what it was, if it was from going underneath all the barbed wire just like super fast. And it was like my second like heat of it doing it, and or second race of doing it, and like sprinting up the hill right after that, going right into the rig. But like I stepped on the step, fell off of it because I was so dizzy, got back up and grabbed the ring with one hand. And then I kind of left the step. And then I was like, oh, wait. I'm like, kind of like felt a little lightheaded. And so I stepped back on the step again, but didn't let go of the ring. So I thought I was fine. Cause I knew that if you let go of the ring, then that's a fall. And so I purposely didn't let go of the ring. And then just went and did the whole rig. So I got down to the bottom and they're like, okay, you qualified for finals, had my name up there and stuff like that. And then I went back just to go look to see how much difference my time was from this one and the one before. Cause my husband had said I ran it faster the second time, which for me, I've kind of discovered that I get faster the longer I go. So that's why sometimes these 3K races are really good for me, because by the time I get to like the third round where you have to go three times, I'm like going harder and faster, which is good. Mm-hmm. So I got down the bottom. All right. I went over there to go check my time, and all of a sudden it was gone. My name was completely off of there. Nobody had said anything to me. My name was just gone. And so I was like, is this a computer glitch? So I went up to the guy and I was like, hey, is your computer glitching? My name's not on there anymore. And he's like, oh no, you got DQ'd. All he said. And I was like, DQ'd? I go, why did I get DQ'd? DQ'd for what? And he's like, well, did you step off of the stair twice? And I go, yeah. Cause I'm not thinking that I did anything wrong. He goes, well, you got DQ'd for that. And I was like, oh, I go, well, shouldn't I have been told to do a penalty loop? And he goes, well, the girl said that, I shouldn't say who it is. The person said that that you didn't do it, that she told you to do it and you didn't do it. And I was like, nobody told me to do anything. And so I said, I want to talk to Steve. So Steve came down and he was really cool. He was kind of put in a hard position. I really do have to say, in general, he was put in a hard position, because when you get judges, you have to trust your judges. Because there's going to be a lot of athletes that are going to be like, oh, they didn't do this or they didn't do that. And they're going to complain about whatever. Coming from me, it was really, really hard, because like a DQ to me was like, it was devastational. And I'm a super honest person. And so for me to be saying, hey, this is what happened. And then like, it's almost like it's, I don't think that they didn't believe me, but it's kind of like they couldn't go by that because they have judges there for a reason. And I get it. I mean, I was an ex-gymnast. I coach gymnastics right now. Like you have to go by whatever the judges say. So anyways, he went back up to the top and he said that when he came back down, he said that the judge said that, I just ignored her. And then the guy that was with her said that she told me, and I was like sitting there thinking, I was like, they really didn't say anything to me. And then I started like getting in my head thinking, okay, maybe they did. And maybe I just didn't hear them. Well, then my brother, so the final starts. And I think at that point I was just kind of a wreck because I should have been in the finals and I was just watching everybody take off and people taking off that I had already beat and they're running in it and I'm not. And so my brother, he happened to be there and he was like, hey, I have video of the race. She doesn't say anything to you. I go, you have video? And then my sister-in-law had it too. So we actually have it from two different angles. And I watched and I was like, I was right. They didn't say anything to me. They didn't try to approach me. And they had plenty of time. And that's what's frustrating is because if I had made a mistake on the very first ring, I had my hand on the ring on the very first one. And that's where the penalty happened right off the step. Shouldn't they have come over like kind of underneath me or around me and stopped me right then? Cause I did the entire rig. Nobody said anything to me. And then I turned and I ran to the laser pistol and that was fairly close to the rig and still nobody came and approached me. And so I just was like, that's just really odd to me that nobody said anything to me. So that's what happened. So I'm not debating or arguing with the fact that I got the penalty or should have had a penalty for breaking a rule of stepping off the stair. I know a lot of people are saying, well, other people stepped off the stairs before and they didn't penalize them. Like whatever. I just want to say that like, it's a rule and rules are rules. And if they want to like charge me with that or whatever, I mean, great. But the fact that I wasn't approached and given the chance to do a penalty loop, I mean, come on, if they would have told me on the very first ring, I would have dropped right then, sprinted over to go do the penalty loop. I mean, what would have taken me maybe 30 seconds? And instead they come back and they give me a 10 minute. I mean, it was better than a DQ, but still like 10 minutes added to my time. I mean, I don't know.
So if you had run the loop, would you still have been in the finals?
That's what I don't know. Cause I don't know how long the loop was, but assuming because it's a 3K course, I could have done meters. It and like, under 30 seconds.
Yeah, would have been 200 meter loop.
I kind of feel like I would have been.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if I hadn't, that would still place me at minimum 9th, not 16th now.
Yeah. And like a 10 minute time basically just puts you out of it regardless.
Yeah. Well, and 10 minutes, I mean, the whole course takes us under 10 minutes. I think my times were 9 something. I mean, the first time, I don't know what it was this time, so. So, I mean, it was a pretty big hit and it was a pretty tough pill to swallow. And I'm glad that they came back and they said something to me and they were like, hey, we shouldn't have ever DQ'd you. Cause Spartan did, they did message me and said that that was pretty harsh and they should have never, ever said that. And they should have never, ever DQ'd me. But they were going to do the 10 minute penalty, which, I think my biggest reason for saying stuff right now and posting the video so everybody can see it and stuff is because I just think there needs to be a change. Because I love the sport so much and I know, oh, I've had so many people reach out to me saying, hey, this happened to me. This has happened to me several times. So I just think there needs to be a change with the judging. And then there probably needs to be a change with the penalty thing because that's like a flat penalty for no matter what race you're doing. So if you do that to me in like a beast, well, 10 minutes, like, okay, that's fair. But if you do that in a 3K course that the whole course is under 10 minutes, like that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to, and I didn't have time today, but I'm going to have to reread the Spartan rulebook because of the changes for the 3K, but the way it used to work. So, and here's my take from the outside going in. Number one, you're absolutely right. Spartan needs to have refs, which they should not have gotten rid of their refs and should have continued to hire their refs, which they were in the process of. And the way it used to work, what you did, yes, is considered a fail on that obstacle. Absolutely. I saw the video. That's a considered a fail. It's written right in the rules. As soon as your feet leave, that's considered an attempt. You put your feet back on. It's no different than if you put your feet on the structure on the side or something along like that.
Right.
Absolutely right. So at that point, you'd be instructed to do the penalty loop. if, say, for example, it used to be you would be instructed to do burpees. Now, if you did not do your burpees, you would receive a 10-minute penalty. It still wouldn't be a DQ. Right. So the DQ should never have been there in the first place. Should have been a 10-minute penalty. However, there is also a loophole, or used to be in the rule book, say, because we ran into this big time when we had our Red Deer incident with McJurillo. It used to be in there where it said up to and including a 10-minute penalty, but that meant there was actually leeway for the race director to do a different penalty, i.e. something a little more appropriate, and they've never used that because they like to do that 10-minute penalty because they started that way back in Woods with when Ryan Woods grabbed the truss on that A-frame, and they gave him a 10-minute penalty for an infraction that maybe gave him a half a second bonus at best. And they nailed him with a 10-minute penalty when, again, nobody told him at the time that he had done something wrong or he would ram up and done it again and lost one position instead of six or seven or however many it was. So, yeah, I watched the video as well. Nobody came and talked to you. And you're absolutely right. When you're and I'm going to put this out there, you know, volunteers, judges, you guys are great. You're doing a thankless job. And this is why it sucks to criticize.
Yes, but, I agree.
But in a time like that, you're in a competitive race. This is a big spotlight. People are racing for money. You have to be authoritative. You have to be in control. And I've had situations myself, and I even think back to Worlds, DECA Worlds, in one of the age group divisions. Dude tried to leave the skier before it hit 500. I actually had to grab him and stop him and pull him back on the platform so it clicked 500 and then he can take off. You have to be in the moment. You have to be assertive. You have to make sure you guys have race brain. You're going
100%. Like there's some times where I'm like, I can't hear what you're saying. My ears are.
and it's like, you can't just be like, oh, Julie, you failed that one. You really gotta tell them, you gotta let them know. And then it continue to go through the obstacle. It's like a tap on the foot. Hey, get off, run your loop.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. And the other part, like I said, Spartan needs to clean up that rule book and get it prepared for this. For this event, you should not be having a 10-minute penalty. Like you said, it's longer than the race. Like an appropriate penalty for action like that, to me, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, something along that line. Could vary per obstacle, because I'm not going to give you a 3-minute penalty for skipping that crawl because the crawl took forever and a day. But yeah, for a rig like that, that is, let's be honest, if you do the rig properly, you're under 40 seconds. Right. I mean, doing it really well, you can get across it in 10 seconds. But a 3-minute penalty, huge, massive, would deter anything and should be fine. But hopefully they clean it up. The only sad part and the reason I worry they're not going to is they're in the process of, like, you know, cutting referees, cutting different things like that, and making it seem less likely like they will. But maybe one day they'll get it.
But I don't understand too, because I thought that this whole 3K thing was their bid to try to create legitimacy in the sport. So if this is our whole goal with, you know, we're sort of trying to create a system where there's a little bit more like regulation and, you know, we have the same system and, you know, the 1K, 1K, 3K. And then why are we then not having volunteers who are willing to use their voice and know the rule book and stop people? And, you know, again, it's like we're trying to create a legitimate, respected sport here. So, like, why are the judges not put in these, like, why are we not picking people in these judging positions who are willing to do the same thing? So, you know, and we're talking about athletes who are, they're investing a lot of money and time and training. And I mean, Julie would have never, ever not run the loop if someone had not told her not to. So why not just put someone in that position who's willing to, you know, grab her, because the pistol was like 200 feet, 20 feet from the judge too. So just grab her and be like, you know, you didn't run your loop. Like, if the goal of Spartan is to create a legitimate sport, we're completely losing it by not having judges who are willing to call people out if they made a slight failure.
Right. And one thing that I think would help too is, like, I mean, I know that some people have been like, oh, bring back the video cameras, but nobody wants to sit in a room and watch like hours and hours of video cameras. But if there was a video camera on every single obstacle, then I feel like that kind of protects the judges, and that also protects the athletes, because if there ever is a dispute, that's an easy way to go look back and be like, was an athlete a big jerk to the judge? Should they get disqualified? Like, were they like inappropriate to the judge? But also at the same time, like when I'm saying, hey, they didn't tell me, and two people, I don't know the reason for why. I mean, maybe she felt like she's going to get in trouble. I mean, I don't know why the guys agreed with her. I don't know the reasoning, but it would have been so easy been like, hey, pause this race. Let me show you this video. So, yeah. Or review the video. So I don't know. I just think it's an easy fix, but yeah, I agree. They need to be people that are willing to be like, I don't care who the athlete is. This is what needs to be done. So
I'll tell you the truth. I believe her. I believe she probably said, oh, that's a fail. But you're doing your thing. You're hard. You can't say, like I said, you can't just say, oh, that's a fail and leave it and let her go. You got to be in there. So maybe she did say, maybe the guy did hear it, because they're off to the side. And it's like, you know, it's too quiet. It's not enough. You got to be in there. The problem lies, though, when you say, why don't they have volunteers that do this and that? Because they're taking anybody they can get.
Yeah.
Because it is so low for volunteers, especially on a Friday night when half the people haven't arrived for the race yet, because they're all coming to race Saturday morning because it's a Friday night event. Which kind of comes down to, and on the rig, especially on that rig, that's where you're going to have most of your failures. That's where you should have your prime, you know, experienced volunteers, referees, judges, whatever you want to call them. That's where they should be. And damn it, I think I lost connection.
No. Well, we can hear you. Your
video good. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so it just says a little unstable, but that's where your head referee should be. That's where you should be on the prime. Like, I mean, if you're on a regular one, you want them on Olympus, you want them on things that people are going to fail. That's where it should be.
With what you're saying, this is a 1K loop and there's really only one obstacle like that people could fail. So why are you not having someone there who's not afraid to use their voice? Well, like, and you know, maybe she did say something, but why didn't she say it a little bit louder? Like again, if someone didn't hear me, I would repeat it again louder.
Right.
Well, like, and then, she's keeping going.
Well, yeah, because I finished the rig. So I'm like,
yeah. And it's not like it wasn't, you know, it's 30 or 40 seconds. So right, use your voice again multiple times.
Right. You would need a judge on the rope too, because apparently there was a problem with the rope too. But so anyways.
We're gonna go to the rope then. long and the short of it, yes, you failed that obstacle. And then after that, there's no blame on your part, because like you say, if you watch that video, there is zero interaction between you and the volunteer or official or whatever. Because if it was a case where they said it to you and you had heard, and you were, even if you were going to pretend like you were going to ignore it, there would be a flinch or a move or something with your head calling direction to someone saying, and there is nothing. You just cruise, you know, you continue on through the obstacle and go on your way. And there's no volunteer comes in the camera shot. No judge comes in the camera shot. There is nothing. It's just you do.
And if she wanted you to hear her, she could have gone to the end of the rig and been like, Julie, stop. Like, that's a fail. Just so you know, go do your loop.
And if I'm not.
And what I was disappointed about too is like you said, the laser pistol was so close. I'm like, even if I still passed the penalty loop and went to the laser pistol, why wasn't I ever approached the laser? I mean, I stood there at the laser pistol, so like I felt like forever because my shot sucked so bad that time. It was just frustrating.
And if I'm not mistaken too, from the video, I didn't see anybody else on the rig with you at the same time. It's not like there were seven of you together. Like, this was the first obstacle, you had all hit it, and they were all together, and she's watching seven people go at once. You know, it's, you know, and again, really hate throwing people under the bus, because this is a woman who took her time, who volunteered, who is trying her best to grow the sport. But unfortunately, in a situation, I think she was put in a position to fail.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unfortunate.
It's really sad because, I don't know. I just feel like if you're going for money and it's such a big series like it is, like, I mean, had that happened in like a normal elite race where there wasn't any money on the line, it would have sucked. I'm not going to lie. That would have sucked, but it's not as big. I mean, this is a big deal. Like, that's going to drop my points. I mean, even though I got some points, it still isn't what I would have gotten. So that's rough. And I wasn't going to race in Mexico because it's my son's birthday. So now I feel like I have to. So I don't know. And that's just going to be more money because, I mean, all of us, I mean, I don't know very many people that have sponsors that are paying out their travel. I mean, I sure don't. So that's coming out of my pocket.
What kind of boy wouldn't want to spend his birthday in Tijuana? I mean, this is a great idea.
I will not bring my kids there.
No.
Anyway,
my husband's already told me, like, I'm not going by myself. And I was like, it's okay, I'll go with one of the other girl racers. And he's like, oh, no, you're going to bring a guy.
From my understanding, you need Katie Knight. Apparently, she protects people when they He's a great protector. So
Katie Knight would throw down. Yeah.
Katie Knight's your one you want.
But, you know, I think this is a good point, though, to recognize, like, when it okay. In the moment, it might have seemed insignificant, but like the domino effect of this is quite significant. So again, someone, the judge not willing to use their voice or, you know, operate out of an authority or whatever. And now like the domino effect is now you might have to plan another trip. It might be on your son's birthday and someone else might have to go. Like all these things now, just because this person, and again, you know, I understand judges are volunteers and stuff, but like the domino effect of this is big. So, you know, do your job, do it well. If you knew that was a failure, use your voice. And if you kept going and she didn't hear you, like make it right. It's a big deal that was a small deal maybe in the moment, but like the effects of it are still, like the repercussions are still very big. So I just think, you know, to take all of these small things and just make them more important. If we're trying to create like a more legitimate sport, it's what needs to happen. Like we can't let these things just like, oh, well, it's volunteers. And, you know, like, you know, maybe volunteers need more training. I don't know. Just, you know, reinforce a little bit more the seriousness of if you're going to let someone go by, they're going to get a 10-minute penalty. It's going to push them out of the standings. They might have, you know, just make a little bit more of a deal of it. I don't know. It just, when we're talking about the sport as a whole, we need to create a little bit more seriousness with things like this.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And it's the kind of thing, like we harken back to CrossFit a lot, where that kind of thing, CrossFit judges are volunteers very, very often. And that kind of thing, they don't tolerate if you don't get brought back out if you make those kind of mistakes or whatever. It's really unfortunate and it sucks, but it does. It is so similar to Red Deer with Mick Jarrello, because in that, when he won that race, got that 10-minute penalty, that dropped him down so low that it essentially made it not worth his while to do the rest of the Canadian series because he didn't have a possibility of winning. Whereas he really was probably the favorite to win the series, but took that DQ, turned to a 10-minute penalty, and all of a sudden, boom, that's out. So financially, that hits him very hard. And in the case with you, you're doing very well.
In the tune of about $10,000.
Yeah, for that one.
Which, to amateur athletes, like, that's a big deal.
Because
he stepped on the side, like, non-intentional. Anyways, we're not going to go there. But, like, a very mildly insignificant, if he had gone back and did it, whatever. But, like, that's a significant amount of money.
And when prize money is fleeting in the sport now, it's you know, when it takes someone like you who was doing very well in the series and has a shot at it and slap them with that, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem appropriate.
But yeah.
Anyway, glad to get out what happened and how it went. And hopefully there is lessons learned. Things are improved. Some things that changed, because that's why we talk about this stuff and we've gone through it before. It's not because we're slagging, not because we don't like Spartan. We love Spartan. I'm wearing a bloody Spartan.
And like I said, I feel like they handled it the best that they could have.
Yes.
As far as you have to trust your judges. And so I don't put any blame on them. I have zero ill feelings. I think Steve did a great job. The course was phenomenal. Like, I just think it was one of those unfortunate things that everybody needs to learn from. But unfortunately, the reason why I guess I kind of want to say more about that, and just in general, is just like the whole judging thing. Like, obviously it wasn't just a problem with me having so many people message me. It's been a problem for a while. It just needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. That said, I mean, you mentioned the course itself. Let's talk about the course, because all the word about the course is the barbed wire crawl from hell.
Yeah.
So you mentioned it. So why don't you take what, and when we've talked about it, there's been lots of posts from Obstacle Racing Media. We've put in our 2 cents here and there. A lot of athletes have put in their 2 cents. It's been David Magida has done some posts, been a lot of publicity about it. What is your take on that barbed wire crawl, the barbed wire itself, the whole setup?
I thought it was really cool. I honestly, when I got there, I looked at that and I was like, that is the coolest barbed wire course I have ever seen, because it wasn't just flat. I liked that it had trenches, but then you also had to go up over the bumps in between. So you had to go super close to the barbed wire. So I don't know. It's like some people, when they're saying comments like, oh, the holes were really deep, how did you cut yourself? I'm like, they were deep in the holes, but you still had to crawl in between each hole. So my take on it, you're probably talking about everybody getting cut up on it, right?
Yeah. What do you think about the whole thing? What do you think you want to talk about?
Okay. So in general, at first I was like, I don't really care. I like the barbed wire because I feel like I have an advantage on that because I'm small. Whereas a larger athlete that I race against has an more advantage on the weight stuff. So to me, that was an advantage. I love it. I don't mind it. I mean, yeah, I get scraped. Don't even get scraped though, or cut up as much as like the poor guys that are like 6 foot tall, those poor guys. But after reading Ryland's post that he did and saying that you could get MRSA, you could get AIDS, you can contract all these diseases from it, I kind of changed my mind about it, because I actually put on my stories how it was a gnarly course and how when I was crawling through it, I saw pools of blood in the water and on the rocks. Like there were sometimes I went to go put my hand down and I was like, oh, there's blood on that. And you're going through it so many times. And after hearing that, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, like take away the barbed wire. But I don't think they should take away the crawl. I think that they need to leave right. The crawl, because I think that's like super Spartan and like super important. And that's like a big deal for obstacles. But they just need to do it without the barbs on it, I guess. So, because I mean, I don't want to get a disease. I don't mind getting cut up or getting battle wounds or from it. I mean, I just feel like that's kind of part of the sport. So I don't, that's my take on it. It was cool though.
Beth, you want to shoot?
Yeah, like I agree with you. And from my perspective too, I'm one of the smallest athletes on a start line. So like the crawls are always like the one obstacle that's to my advantage. So that's fine. Like make crawls long and gnarly. And but I've always kind of felt like people getting cut up and stuff is unnecessary. The other thing too is that I worry about, and it's happened to me too, is like as a female, like your hair gets caught and sometimes it's bad news. And again, when there's money on the line and it's something so insignificant as like my hair got wrapped around the barb, and you know it took me a couple minutes and I had to rip my hair out, and you know, to get it, okay, again, it's like it's kind of one of those things that's kind of gimmicky about Spartan and it creates these stories. But when money's on the line, or you know, you've paid this money to travel to here and whatever, that's, you know, that is frustrating, and it has nothing to do with your racing abilities. It's just the luck of the draw that my hair got caught on this one barb. But yeah, I do think there are some health issues when it comes to racing with barbed wire. And unless this happens to you, we kind of joke about like, oh man, my back was cut up and there was blood, and you know, it's the battle wounds that you bring to the gym on Monday and stuff. But like, blood infections are kind of a big deal, and it is also something where if it's bad enough, people can die from blood infections, and that's not a joke. And there's things like blood illnesses too that can happen, and you know, that's not insignificant. And I do, again, because I run a gym, and there are, like, I have clients too who are like, no, I would never do that. Like, it's just not worth it to me. And it's like, why would I crawl under? Why would I want to get scraped up by barbed wire? That's so weird. Like, there's just things that's not for a lot of people. And it, and I, like, I've raced OCRWC and they have crawls and it's just a wire with no barb. And it doesn't change. No one's like, oh, I wish OCRWC had barbed wire. Like, it doesn't change the race whatsoever. You just don't have all these scrapes up your back. And, you know, Poconos, when I saw a bunch of the guys' backs, and I'm like, that's so unnecessary. That, and, like, I saw the blood dripping down, like, you know, Ryan Kempson's back and Atkins and Austin. And it's like, that's excessive and just and not necessary for, like, the outcome of the race. Or it's like, what are our goals here as a sport? And again, we're trying to create, as far as I understand from Spartan, we're trying to create a legitimate sport. And I just don't see the giant lacerations on people's back drawing the masses in or creating a legitimate sport where we're trying to create, you know, consistency and all of this. And I don't think that, you know, with the whole Olympic bid and stuff, that's not really the path to get there either. So I understand the whole, like, you know, Spartan up and they call them what, the Spartan kisses, whatever, like that whole side of things. I understand that, but are we creating like a gimmicky situation or are we trying to create a legitimate sport? And I think they have to choose their path. Barbed wire is one path. Lashing up your back is one path. And I think the creating a legitimate sport is the other. And I don't think the barbed wire belongs in that one.
Right. Well, and two things on that. It was pretty shocking to see those guys come down with so many cuts on their back. Like, it literally looked like they were whipped. And it was like, it actually like broke my heart. It was pretty horrible to watch and look at. So I see why they don't want to have it in there. And people are like, oh, get lower. Well, you're going as fast as you can.
Yeah.
When you race it at this level, you can't go slower. Like, that's just not how you race. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel for those guys. Once I saw that, I was like, that's horrible. I mean, it looked really bad. But the other thing I was going to point on is, like, some people, I just feel like sometimes when people fight stuff or they're so like against something, it's just because they have to have lack of knowledge of what they're talking about or experience, I guess, of what they're talking about. So I have a daughter that has cystic fibrosis. And if I were to contract any of those diseases, I wouldn't be able to be around her because she's in a position where she gets that in her lungs, like it will kill her. So, and she can get stuff in her lungs pretty easy. So to me, like when I hear, oh my gosh, I could get that stuff, I'm like super paranoid. I'm like, oh, I don't have any part of that. So I think people need to think outside the box other than just themselves being something like, oh, it's super hard to do, so you should just buck up and just do it and don't be a pansy type of thing, because it just goes on beyond just one person. So,
yeah. Or like you have, and I mean, I have an acquaintance who died of a blood infection. Yeah. And, you know, a 32-year-old healthy, you know, he got a cut and it, you know, so I think sometimes it's, like, there's some ignorance with things okay, you know, you get your cuts and that's all, that's cool and whatever. But, like, there's also a side of things where it could be serious. And, you know, maybe I'm blowing things out of proportion. But at the same time, I think we're also, it's extremely avoidable. It doesn't have to be.
Agree. That it's like a rare chance that could happen, but still it's a chance. Right. And that's like, it's an unnecessary chance because I mean, we don't have the best luck in my family. It's going to happen to me.
Right. I feel sometimes. If it's going to happen to someone, it's going to happen to me.
Right.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting here and I look at this and I look at the crawl, and I was like you, the first thing when I saw that crawl, I said, that looks cool. That looks challenging. That looks nasty. That's going to wear people out. That's going to be a game changer for the course. That said, and I posted it online and I continue to say this, the barbed wire serves no purpose. It never has. It never will. And the only thing it's good for is so that people can go to their work on the next day and say, I was crawling under barbed wire because I'm a real fucking badass.
Yeah.
And that is the only purpose it serves, which means it has no relevance to competition whatsoever. So when I'm, you know, and I like to build obstacles. I'm an obstacle guy. That's well known. When I make something, when I look at it, I think, what is the benefit of it? What is the benefit? Mm-hmm. And if you ask me, those barbs on the wire serve zero benefit compared to the damage they can do. And we've seen really nasty, and let's step away from the diseases a bit and go a little bit less, but really nasty cut-ups on Ryan Woods down in Jacksonville one time, really sliced open his thighs, was very, really bad. Rose Wetzel has had very bad experience with the barbed wire and stuff. And it's all for naught. It serves no purpose. So I got into a few discussions online with it and ask people, tell me why. Tell me the good reason to have it. Tell me anything bonus. And they're like, well, it makes them go even lower. Great. Okay, cool. Take the barbs off and lower the wire more.
Well, and I don't know how many Spartan races you've done this year, but they actually have lowered all the barbed wire.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so low that like I'm like on my stomach, either rolling through or crawling on my stomach. And normally I don't have to. So
and that's
he only does it in the open, but he's 6'4". He's a large dude and he can't help. Like, even if he's on his stomach, he's getting scraped up like crazy.
Yeah.
So. And that's awesome. That's great. I want the low crawl. I love the low crawl. Yeah. It's fantastic. But you don't need to be cutting people open for it. It serves no benefit.
And this is super insignificant, but like every Spartan race I've done this year, I've ripped my shorts. And my hair's got caught.
It's expensive.
Like, I don't know, whatever. That's not significant. That's not like whatever, but it's costly. Like, I've ripped the butt out of my Chevy shorts I've worn this year in Spartan because they're so low.
didn't Callie, I think that her shorts got like, no, maybe it was her sports bra. Something got ripped like off of her on the barbed wire, and a guy that was ripped by her had to give her something recently. Oh. I can't even remember what it was, but yeah, that would have been pretty embarrassing. So,
anyway, not necessary.
It just, like I said, it risk reward. It's not there. It's just not worth it. It doesn't serve a useful purpose. Regular wire will work fine. Chains, those look cool. Put those across the top. Mm-hmm. Big gauge wire. There's tons of stuff you can use that would make it would be just as effective. Heck, put hard boards away. There's just so many different ways to go about this.
Well, a net. If you do a net, nobody.
Big, heavy cargo net. At
that point. Yeah. I mean, there's like so many things you could use that would work. So.
Well, and I've crawled under a tarp before where like it was so black, you couldn't see where you were going and you got disoriented and like, and then I came out super muddy, but like I didn't get like scraped up like crazy and my clothes didn't get half ripped off and like, you know, my hair wasn't caught in anything and it was still like super challenging, but a little bit less risk. So
yeah, there was quite a few girls that said that they ripped out bald spots in their head at that race. Luckily,
and for those that have commented and said, hey, you know, it's part of Spartan, blah, 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 it's this and that. Bethany pointed this out earlier. Nobody's not going to a race because it's not barbed wire. Nobody cares. Nobody says, you know what? I like that race, but it's not barbed wire. It's just a low crawl. I'm out.
Yeah.
And it's never.
Well, when people say go slower, I'm like, it's a race. Like, how do you tell an elite athlete going for money? I mean, even if I'm not going for money, to slow down when it's a race, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're an open, just having it for fun, great, slow down. But
yeah, it's totally different.
So
yeah. And I have heard other people comment and say, well, these are just the elites are just pansies or whatever. I'm like, oh God, it's not their first rodeo, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I actually said something about that on one of the posts that somebody put out. I can't remember who it was, and they were talking about barbed wire and they were saying, oh, the elites are just a bunch of complainers. And I was like, first of all, I feel like there's maybe just a couple complainers in the whole entire group. Everybody's actually super cool. I'm a newcomer to it and everybody's been amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And I've met some really good lifelong friends through it. And I mean, there's pretty dang tough people. There is not a pansy in the bunch. So it's a little frustrating because I feel like all of the elites pretty much in general have one goal in mind, and that's to make the sport of OCR better and keep it around for a long time, and especially with Spartan, keep it around because we all love Spartan. So, I shouldn't say we all love Spartan. A lot of us really do like Spartan. We just want to see some stuff improved and some stuff done a little bit better. But I feel like we're in the position where we should be using our voices and be like, hey, if we did this, we could improve. And instead of it's like taken as like a whining thing, and it's not, it's just a suggestion just because we do it all the time.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Julie. I think you're completely right. Like, it's not people whining. It's just we want better for the sport, and we just don't always see it happening. And, you know, the people that do their one or two races in open every year, they just don't always see it the way elites do, who, again, you're racing fast, you're not slowing down on things, and you're being called out by judges, and all these things affect you a little bit more when you're racing at that level. So, no, I think you're exactly right. Like, you know, I've raced Spartan for a while now too, and I don't think that people that race at the elite level are soft or whiners by any means. We just want what's best for the sport, and no one's really making a fortune here. We want to keep seeing the sport grow and, you know, sustain itself, because we love doing it for the sake of having something that's, you know, it's kind of a fun race to do, and it challenges us. So we want it to continue to grow and to be better, you know, year after year.
Yeah.
And along the same lines of all of it there too, we did have Ryan Atkins was in the hospital after the race with severe swelling. It's like, I don't know if it was from a cut from the barbed wire, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. It was an infection, and he's doing better. So good to see you're doing better, Ryan. That's awesome. But yeah, just again, precautions, things that need to be looked at. Moving on to a different stage of the course. And this is my soapbox, my friggin' drive me freaking nuts every time. It makes me angry. Straps above the ropes.
Yeah.
All right, sure. You know what I'm talking about. So tell, you're an obstacle girl. Back me up.
Okay. Two things on it. Didn't use the straps when I did it. I mean, you can see my video. I didn't use them. I am good at overhead rigs, so that's kind of my thing. So I didn't feel like I needed to use them. But to be fair, they did say at the very beginning, if you want to use above the holds, you're more than welcome to. So they did tell people they could. So I don't have a problem if they want to like do that. I mean, whatever. I think in Florida, I actually might have grabbed a chain one time because we were coming out of muddy water and right into the rig. And I was like, at that point, I think it was like my second or third loop on the final. And I didn't want to risk it. So I think I did grab a chain at one point. If they banned doing that, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Wouldn't have a problem with it at all. So I don't practice grabbing the chains, that's for sure.
I don't blame any of the athletes. I don't blame any of the athletes that grab above the strap, above the apparatus whatsoever. I don't, because they're being told they can. And if one person's going to do it, you're taking what you're putting yourself at a disadvantage by not taking every advantage you can. You're racing competitively. You have to do what you can to win, to stay in their game. Right. So I don't blame any of the athletes at all. I blame Spartan wholeheartedly, 100%. And this is the part that infuriates me. Again, I was supposed to go to this race. I got the email before, like a month ago or whatever, saying, hey, this is the course layout and we're making the difficult rig. Well, who the fuck cares if you make it a difficult rig? Because every rig's the same. I just grab the straps above the whatever. So you could make it teeny tiny dime crimps and it doesn't matter because I just grab the strap above it. So you're not making a difficult rig. You're just having the same rig over. Are you just saying, oh, well, this time you won't use the rings. You'll use the strap above the rings instead. And it's... If I was building the course, I'd be like, why do I bother? Like, what's the point?
Yeah. Who cares what holds you put on them?
Yeah. Yeah. You can put them. I can make the most difficult rig out there and you just can wrap above it. So it doesn't matter what it is. So it bothers me that Spartan has not committed to saying, and this is all they need to do. Just sit on the start line. Don't grab the straps. Done. Perfect. And what it does too, is it opens it up to more difficult. Somebody like Julie, again, is going to be even more competitive now because she has a bigger advantage there than, say, someone who is a pure speed runner, you know? Yeah. And that, I think, it makes obstacles matter more when they're used as intended. So I don't know. I don't know when they're going to fix it. And that's why I put the post up about take the barbed wire off the crawls and put it on the straps above, and then everything's happy, right? Nobody will grab it then.
That was the best.
Yeah, and if you want to grab it, then more power to you. Have at it.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So yeah, and Beth, I think I know where you stand, but go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, if you're going to make a rig, make people use the rig. And when this first started in Blue Mountain in 2022, the nunchucks that they used, whatever was held on top, also, they still had these, like, crazy sharp edges on where people were grabbing, and people were like getting these crazy cuts on their wrists and stuff. So just make people grab the holds, you know, make the rig actually a significant obstacle. I agree. And I think with it being an OCR, make the obstacles actually a bit of a factor. I have a question for you too, because this just came out also this afternoon, where they've talked about with Spartan, they are going to eliminate the timing mats.
Yeah. So
they, you know, and the clickbait was Spartan eliminating timing. And that's not true. We're still going to have our timing chips, but they're eliminating the timing mats throughout the course. So this isn't going to affect the 1K and the 3K because you can see the whole race. But how do you feel about this happening then when it comes to our beast courses?
You know, I just started racing beast this year for the first time, and I'm kind of in love with them. I've only raced two, and I got a first and a second. I think it's my thing. So I don't know how I feel about them taking it off, because I just feel like it opens up a window. If someone were to be dishonest and cut the course. I don't think it would open up
I like her.
Words, is what I'm saying.
No, you get it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, there was at one point on the Big Bear one that I went a mile off course, and I was terrified that, like, I was like not gonna be able to find my way back. I just had to follow it all the way back and like get back on course, because I was like, I don't want to get cut from this race. And I just feel like if someone goes even off course unintentionally, it's pretty easy just to cut down and go to the first place you see if there's no timing mats. So, I mean, I wouldn't do that.
But it will happen.
It will happen.
Yeah, even if it's accidentally, it will happen. And they might not even realize till they're like another 2 miles in, going, oh crap, I just cut 3 miles of course. It will happen. And that's the problem. And it seems like typical cost cutting at the expense of the sport. Now, mind you, if they're not really trying to make it competitive, then hey, I get where they're going. But it just seems like another step backwards.
Do you think that Spartan's not going to bring back any competitiveness in the future with the other ones? Like, I'm kind of hoping, I would love to see a series that's like a 3K, a sprint, a super, and a beast. And maybe they offer two of each, and you have to rise, like one of each one has to count.
Love it.
I mean, that would be the ultimate.
Would be awesome. That would be fantastic. That would be exciting. That would give a lot of variety and be good fun. And, you know, we've talked about stuff like that before. I hope they do go that way. And I'm hoping that because open and age group attendance seems so good, that will prompt them to spend the money and to go that way. I don't even care about huge prize money in it. You know, you don't got to put a ton in it. Just make a competitive series. Make it worthwhile to go to elite. Make it worthwhile to jump in and really be super competitive with it, to try to draw out the best athletes you can.
Well, and I don't think at the end of the day, I really don't think that it's the prize money for the 1, 2, and 3 that are keeping everybody coming back, because I mean, that's, you're really only talking a couple people who are really showing up for that kind of prize money. So, I mean, everything else is taken into consideration, you know, and people want their courses to count. People want it to be taken seriously. People want the judging to be on point. People want to know their time. People in the masses want to compare their time to the elites, and like all of that is important. So when you start to take away these things, or, you know, like nonchalantly let people go by in the elite field for, or, you know, when you take the timing mats too, it's like you're just opening people up. It's, and even the elites who have, like, they've accidentally cut courses before. And there's also a safety factor to that too. Like, you know, someone you haven't seen them for a while, your racer, and you're waiting for them and you don't know where they are, and you can go on and check, well, have they crossed this mat? Have they crossed this mat? Like, you know, 21 kilometers in a race is a long time to be out there too. And there's a safety factor to knowing where people are. And I think if you're going to start cutting costs in these areas, it's, you're not going to get your like consistent return people coming back to the sport. Like, you're just, you're kind of watering it down. And I don't know, I just think they're pulling from the wrong places when it comes to growing the sport.
I agree. You know, I've always actually wondered too, because I mean, I told my husband when I started doing this, I'm not going to chase a paycheck. Like, I'm not racing to get the money. I mean, obviously, because the 3K series is the only one in this that does it, but I race other Spartan races all the time. But I kind of wondered why don't they offer like swag? Like, you get so much towards their merchandise, yeah, or you get a free race. Oh my gosh, that would be like amazing. Yeah. Because you just paid to come and enter that race and paid so much money. And obviously, you just, even if you win money, how it was before, you don't get enough money back to pay for, yeah, even your trip to go, mm-hmm, there. Just, I mean, a free race would go a long way. So, I mean, I just think there's little things that they could do,
yeah,
to make, so it doesn't give them a huge ding, but it makes us happy. So
here's the thing. Say an average Spartan weekend is getting between 5,000 and 7,000 people signed up, registrations to race. Raise the price $2. No one's going to know. No one's going to care. Take that money, put it directly into your competitive wave, whether it's prize money, whether it's free races, whether it's seasons passes for a specific 20 athletes that you want in the competitive division.
Okay. I'm going to like counter you a little bit. I think they need to stop raising the prices of Spartan races, because I think it's actually got a little bit ridiculous.
It is.
And I think what they need to do is offer people a little bit more, because all they've been doing is taking away and continuing to raise the prices. Like, and what you make your money with repeat clients. So if you're not offering people a quality product and people are paying $150 to do their race, and, you know, there's nothing in the festival area anymore, and, you know, they're not even getting, like, there's no timing as far as, well, there's no comparison with, you know, they want to see how they do with all these other things that go into it. You know, there's not even music anymore in the festival area. And it's so... what keeps people coming back? And that's where you get your money. Like, stop charging people more and taking more away. Like, give people more so that they want to come back. That's how you make your money as a business, is repeat clients. Give them a quality product, then they're willing to come back again. So I don't keep raising the prices, because I think that's what Spartan's been doing, and they've been taking away, raising the prices to try to offset their deficit. And I think it's the wrong business move. And they're losing people who, like, our faithful Spartan advocates are getting frustrated. And, you know, when someone who's, you know, your longtime Spartan person, like, let's just, like, for, okay, I'll just say me, for example, and I can bring 25 people from my gym to a Spartan race. And if I've kind of lost my fire for Spartan, there could be 25 less people at a Spartan race, because I haven't convinced half of my gym to show up. So I just think, give them more, stop charging them more. The environment, the ambiance of the experience itself is, I think, where they need to focus a little bit more.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
She's not.
I'm not even going to say nothing, because you're right.
It really is about the experience. I own a gymnastics gym, and, I mean, we're no dummies. You don't make your money off of the competitive kids, but the competitive, though, does bring in the younger ones, that ones, mm-hmm, that are like, oh my gosh, I want to be like them, type of thing. So I feel like that's what they're kind of missing, is like, you do need to make it a big experience for all the open waivers, but you also can't forget about the competitive people, because that's where they're aspiring to be. And if you drop that one, then what? Mm-hmm. I mean, then it's just like another just like local race that's like whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think they're both super important. I think that they need to remember that.
And then it becomes that you can only do that office, everybody go out and do a race every now and again without having the sport, because then it just loses it. It becomes an adventure. And once you've done that adventure enough, it's not an adventure anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when you need people who are committed to the sport. So,
yeah.
All right. I want to talk about a couple things a little more positive. Okay. You guys are such downers. Lindsay, back on the course. Lindsay and Ryan, but we'll focus on Lindsay. What have you had a chance to race Lindsay prior to this last weekend?
No, that was my first time.
That
was the experience. So that also too just ate at me that I couldn't be in the finals with her. I mean, I did get to race her in one of my loops, so that was cool. And she's incredibly nice. She is like the sweetest person. So I think it's really cool that to see this person that I've been like, oh my gosh, you're so great. Come and show up. And she was incredibly nice. So, and she did a fantastic job. She was, I mean, obviously unbeatable. So
it's just another shot where she meant her GOAT status, and you know, and at least in Spartan for sure. And
correct.
Playing all OCR, but yeah, was great to see her out there and doing so well. And you know, people had some questions like, oh, you know, she hasn't done an OCR yet this year. She's just been running, but showed she was just good. Although she did grab the straps and even above the ring. Oh, Lindsay.
No, she did. I don't even know who did and who didn't. Although that somebody just told me that I was like one of the few females that didn't grab it. So yes. That's funny. A lot of us were kind of wondering too, when she was coming in, if she was going to do okay, because she's been doing so much distance stuff. Like, how would she be on a sprinting type course? But I mean, obviously she showed us up. So
I think with her, if you put any kind of descent in it and any kind of hill climb and then just some rough and rugged terrain, all of a sudden she's deadly no matter what the distance is.
Well, she was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that she showed up. It was good to race her.
All right. Another question along the same lines for you both. And again, Atkins come back second place, did great. Yeah. His classic second place thing. No, it's not worlds.
And Kempson is on fire. He looks
that's my question. Is Kempson the best OCR racer in the world right now?
Are you asking me?
Both of you, either or.
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm qualified to answer that.
Well, so who are we stacking him up against right now?
So right now you'd have Kempson, you'd have Sean Roberts. You'd have people overseas like Thomas Von Tonder came over from this one. Their races are completely different though.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know the European males that well. Like Leon will come over once in a while, and I don't follow the European circuit that well, but
Sergey Perelkin.
Yeah, Sergey and so Kempson was beaten by Roberts in the sprint off, which I mean, no shame to Kempson. Roberts is finish. Yeah, very exciting finish. And I think when you're sprinting off against a sub 4 minute miler, it's just, you know, it's your race to lose. So I don't know. Kempson just in the North American circuit right now, I think he could probably be the best OCR racer in North America right now.
I'm going to say right now he's possibly the most versatile and maybe the best right now, because he is the one North American, not the one, but he would be the best North American racer in my mind to challenge the European style courses as well.
Yeah.
So where
he's so good on obstacles.
Yeah. He's very smooth and he's very at that wide range of ability. So yeah, I think right now he may be number one. He'll be right up there. And I think that's, you know, we need
to talk. And he keeps tooting his Savage Race horn. So if you want to put yourself up against Ryan Kempson, then you go race the Savage Race.
Yeah, there you go. If you want, prove me wrong, prove Ryan wrong, go get him. Mm-hmm. Awesome. You know what? I think that's good for today. Julie, you're awesome. Thank you very much for coming on and clearing the air about what happened. Beth, take us out.
Thanks so much, Julie, for joining us. It's been exciting to watch you grow in this sport and keep getting out there and doing your thing, because it's inspiring to see. And again, you know, as a mom and a business owner, yeah, it's inspiring. So keep getting out there and inspiring people, and, you know, just keep enjoying the sport for what it is.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.